appreciate the reference to the earlier meanings to May Day, that May Day is a time of workers' unity goes back really to 1886, when there was a general strike in the United States for a radical idea called the 8-hour day. Wouldn't that be a nice thing if we had that today? And it led to the what's called the Haymarket Riots, where I think four anarchists were eventually hanged, anarchists being, well, that's what they were called then. And as a result of that, May 1st became a remembrance for labor and became a very central part, probably the most important part of the celebrations of the Soviet Union. You know, when you're based on a sort of atheistic ideology, you get your holidays where you can. And so May Day became very, very important to them. But you know, as what happened with the old May Day celebrations and a lot of the old pagan celebrations, when Christianity imperialistically came to the indigenous parts of the world, they often built their churches over the old sacred spots and built new holidays to their Christian gods over the times of the old gods and goddesses. And in 1958, the United States tried to make May 1st Loyalty Day. You know, sort of as an example of, well, that didn't work too well, as the fact that nobody remembers that. It didn't quite work. But at any rate, it shows the history that people have inside of themselves that they aren't necessarily aware of, because May 1st, May Day, has always been a holiday for the liberation of common people, going back as far as you can think. Found out the first celebration of May Day in America was in 1628, up in the Boston area, by a group of runaway, rebellious, indentured servants in an area called Wollaston, named after General Wollaston. And after a few May Days, they changed what had been Mount Wollaston to Marymount. So that gives you some idea of what the May Day celebrations were like. And if you go up to the Boston area, now Wollaston, it still looks like the place of runaway indentured servants. It's an isolated, primarily African-American, really poor section that's just barely connected to the subway system and so forth. One of the things that was so bad about what the indentured servants did, they consorted with Indians. You know, they there must have been something about their May Day revels that just naturally appealing to the Native Americans. And that was, of course, one of the things that was really terrible that they did. It's not surprising that indentured servants would celebrate May Day. It has long been a celebration of common people, not the gentry or the ruling or property-owning classes. The ruling classes for so many centuries, not only in this country but in Europe, were Christians, often descended from the conquerors or the collaborators with the imperial Christian forces. And the common people that were in the areas, even if they were nominally Christian, often retained the older pagan pre-Christian rituals and celebrations. And May 1st, Beltane, is 6 months apart from Halloween or Samhain. And so everything that happens at May Day is sort of the opposite of what happens at Halloween. The first being, and most practical, was that the livestock was let outdoors. You know, it was now warm enough, you could let the livestock get outdoors. The children could go outside and be free. There was nothing scary about anything that was happening in May Day. You didn't have to pay so much attention to them. They could run free. And it was now, shall I say, comfortable to do all sorts of things outdoors that in the winter can only be done indoors. Beltane is actually the reason why June became such a traditional month for Christian weddings. And that is one of the things that Christian weddings have to do with is not only being straight, but paternity. You know, Christianity was very, very important. Paternity was very very important in Christianity. A lot of what marriage is has about rights and ownership. And at the Beltane rituals, pretty much anybody was free to do anything with anybody. That was the old tradition. So it took until June where you could determine for sure paternity. So nobody wanted to get married in May, because if there was issue in May, it was uncertain the paternity. But once you got June, the revels of Beltane were far enough in the past that you could maintain paternity. So you're not going to hear that any other place in the world today. They also built fires for Beltane. Back before television and DVDs and baseball and all sorts of stuff, bonfires was sort of the general way of group activity. And of course, the bonfires lit at Halloween. People took the coals from the bonfire into their hearth and lit their individual hearth fires with it. At Beltane, it was just the opposite. They really no longer needed the hearth fires particularly. They would take the last embers from their hearth fires and bring together for the common bonfire. And so it was a very literal ritual of the connection between the community fire and the community entertainment and what was happening in the individual homes and the individual families. Which brings me to the Maypole, which we may be celebrating more of Langston Hughes' Silver Rain today than other things, but we'll give it a shot. And that the Maypole is not an old pagan ritual going back to Beltane, actually. It's not even part of the British Isles. Its origin probably is either in Germany or the Scandinavian countries, and it really wasn't until about the 17th century that it came to England. And so those indentured servants in Boston, they were probably German or Danish or Scandinavian or something like that. They wouldn't have been probably Irish or Scots or English. But it came to England for the reason it came to everywhere. It's fun. It's a form of dance. For many centuries, and I think it's probably still true in some of the more rural villages in England, different villages and towns vie to have the most elaborate May ritual, the most elaborate May dance, and one of the ways that towns could vex each other would be to steal their maypole or saw it up or something like that. So the way that like football teams now steal the other team's mascot, that sort of thing. And of course the church tried to stamp out the practice of the maypole and the Beltane fires and everything. And what happens when that occurs is that the adults quit doing it and it sort of trickles down to the kids. So even within all these years when they knew that the May celebrations were heretical to the church, the kids always practiced the maypoles and things like that. Maypoles have been common in Unitarian Universalist religious education for quite a long time, but for many years they were confined to the children and the religious education program is the way they were in the general population. I first heard of adult Unitarian Universalists doing the maypoles or the May dancing in the early 80s when the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans got started, CUPS, which I was a member of and was an early board member on. But I didn't really take part in an adult maypole dance until sometime in the mid-90s when I served the Fourth Universalist Society on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I think some of you have probably been in that building. It's a neo-Gothic cathedral. It has a high, high, high vaulted ceiling. The congregation, in its wisdom, several years ago, however, took out the fixed pews. So for most Sundays, we would have the pews the way they are now. But when we wanted to do other things or have other rituals, we could move the pews back. So we were able to do the May dance inside the cathedral. Okay? Don't do May dances inside of cathedrals. Okay? There's a reason why, you know, that Christian architecture is as inimical to May dancing as Christian theology. Because what we did is we had the beginnings of it way up at the top, you know, because we had a cherry picker and we got one of our, you know, supers to go up there. So we had the ribbons were very, very long, you know, and it was kind of spectacular. And when it started, it was quite a big circle that we had. The fact that there was no pole may say something about masculine influence in the Unitarian Universalist Association at the time, but we won't go into that. The problem is that when you have the really long ribbons, the connection between the individual dancer and the center is very long. And metaphorically, that means that we should not get too far from our natural center, or else you're going to get confused into exactly where you're going. So we got it done. You know, we ended up all sort of tangled in the middle like you're supposed to. But again, symbolically, it was pretty chaotic. There was resistance by some. Others did not listen nor follow directions. Others wanted to do it their own way. Several people had no idea what was going on. And the minister had never done it before at all. So that was really kind of typical of UU process in terms of developing ritual. But to all of our credits, we kept doing it, and it kept getting better and more functional. And we got the idea and realized some of the things that these old dances do for us that we didn't realize we had lost until we start regaining them. And that is, like the bonfire, the maypole dance shows the relationship of the individual to the community and the community to its source in the natural cycles. The primary movement of the dance is weaving in and out, back and forth, this way and that, high and low. And weaving is a dance of opposites, a uniting of polarities, the union of polarities. It's the sublimation and extolling of the generative principles, an expression of the same at this time of year when the earth's generativity is also apparent and renewed. And it's very useful for Unitarian Universalists or any community because it requires the kind of cooperation that communities need but too often don't have or understand how to get. It's the relationship of the individual to the community. It may manifest that connection between the individual and the community. And that you can, within that, you can dance pretty much however way you want, but you really do need to be going in a particular direction. There needs to be somebody in front of you and somebody behind you, and you need to realize that you're going somewhere and came from somewhere, and that people need to compensate from the fact that some people naturally are going to move faster and some people need to go slower. We need, like a flotilla of ships, to understand what is the rate the community can move, which is not as fast as the fastest nor as slow as the slowest. That we're all doing our part, that we all need to weave in and out if we're going to get the job done. And this is how community is created. And it's done so in the maypole dance without regard for age or gender, sexual orientation. We can all take part in the dance. And now a lot of Unitarian Universalists do May dance, children and adults together, various rituals reflecting an updated version of these old rituals. It feels right to us. It goes back to our appreciation for universal forms of worship. They transcend and predate monotheism with its paternalism, imperialism, and homophobia. They do not require belief other than the belief that you are human and celebration is good and cooperation and community possible. They celebrate the changing of the seasons and speak to the joyous scientists and humanist tendencies within Unitarian Universalists. They help us worship our children, appreciate our worship with our children and appreciate our elders. Most importantly, it helps us to relearn that important art of weaving. The strands of wool are knitted together and become strong pieces of clothing. The strands of a rope are weaved together and become a strong, unbreakable line. That's what May 1st celebrated. That's what they were celebrating to try and get the 8-hour day. That's what they were trying to celebrate, to understand that working people and people who are not entirely under the dominion of property can work together to maintain what they need for community. So the May Day celebration of Beltane, the May Day celebration of Brooklyn and in the Haymarket are not different celebrations. They're simply different manifestations of that in and out, back and forth, young and old, way of all of us being together, celebrating that the earth, once again, has given us what we need for life. We need only to celebrate it and understand how to make it our own and to share. May we join together in our closing hymn, number 16.